seriously popular.
Have you ever felt like escaping to your own desert island? Jane Gaskin did exactly that, trading in the family home to begin a new life in the tropics. But she soon discovers that paradise has its secrets. I'm Alice Levine, and this is The Price of Paradise, the island dream that ends in kidnap, corruption, and murder. Wish you were here? Follow The Price of Paradise now, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
How come you're a suspect?
The two killers of 16-year-old Brianna Jai have just been sentenced.
We now can tell you that they are Scarlett Jenkinson and Eddie Ratcliffe, both of them 16 years old.
There we have it, the sentence handed down there by Mrs. Justice Yip for the murder of Brianna Jai.
Please take the defendants to the cells.
Today, Liz, we've got a really special extended episode of the podcast to bring because we're lucky enough to have a truly exceptional woman as our guest, Brianna's mother, Esther Jai.
Yes, we're really privileged to sit down with Esther, who agreed to give us her first long-form audio interview on Tuesday this week, just a few days before the anniversary of Brianna's death on Sunday.
Yeah, she gave us a whole day of her time to chat to us in depth about her daughter, the moment she realised that she'd been taken from her, all the emotions she's been through over the past 12 months, and of course, how she has now thrown herself into campaigning for new legislation for better regulation of mobile phones and social media for children, and more teachers trained in mindfulness in UK schools.
Welcome to episode 15, Esther Jai. A mother's story.
We are so pleased to have Esther with us today. Over the past few days since the sentencing, you know, a lot of the talk has been about the perpetrators of this terrible crime, but feel so privileged really to have you here, Esther, to talk to us about your daughter and, you know, tell us a bit more about her. So we're here a couple of days before the anniversary. Do you want to just talk us through how you've coped following the sentencing and what you're planning to do to mark that anniversary on Sunday?
Overall, I'm feeling okay. I think that everything that I've been concentrating on and pushing forward for positive change has been really helping me. Obviously, I get days where I'm not feeling so great, but those, as time's going on, they're getting few and far between. On Sunday, that will be the anniversary of Brianna's death, and we're going to be doing a vigil in Warrington Town Centre. I'm hoping that there's going to be a lot of people there so that if Brianna can see, she can see how much she's loved.
And I think you said to me earlier that you feel like she's still with you.
Yeah, definitely. So I always feel like I can see signs that sort of Brianna's sending me. So every time that there's a significant point, there's pink skies. So for example, when we had the verdict, I think that there was rainbow clouds, unusual rainbow clouds, and that was on the day of the verdict. And then on the day of the sentencing, there was pink skies. After she passed away, we've got lots of cherry blossoms in our local areas. Just, they were blooming massively, like I've never seen them, so big and bright and pink was Brianna's favourite colour. So, I feel like she is still there with me. And I also feel like she is in a better place now. I get comfort to know that I think that she's okay, and she's sending me these signs to tell me that she's happy, she's all right.
You're obviously going to go to the vigil. Will you be speaking at the vigil, or will some of Brianna's friends be speaking at the vigil?
There's a few of Brianna's friends that have written something. I think that a couple might be reading if they feel up to it. I'm going to write something, and I'm not sure how I'm actually going to feel on the day, so I'll write something, and if I can't get on stage to speak, then I'll get somebody else to read that out for me. But like, my main priority for that day is that it's all about Brianna. She enjoyed attention, and like, she always wanted to be famous, and I just want to make sure that she knows that it's for her. So I want her friends to be there, and I want people to be able to be there and remember Brianna for exactly what she is or who she was.
So just tell us a bit about that person that you remember.
She was absolutely hilarious. She was so funny. She had she had such an infectious laugh. I always feel so... It's so, like, bittersweet, you know, remembering this kind of stuff, because... It sort of brings, it highlights that I'm not going to see that again. She had such a good sense of humour, and she was just so full of life, and she loved life, and she was also a normal teenager, and we would like come head to head over like what. Her social media use and her on the phone, and she wouldn't allow me to look at her phone, and she was just a normal teenager, and I miss her so much, and I'd just love to hear her voice again. Like, I go on my phone and I've got like a few videos, and I listen to her voice, you know, just to kind of help me remember. Sometimes I just go through just to hear a laugh. It was such a quirky little laugh that she had.
I was interested in, you said about, obviously pink was such a massive thing. She loved the colour. That's become a theme for you, if you like, of all key moments. It seems to be surrounded by pink.
Yeah.
But you also said those signs seem to you to be a bit of a signal that she's telling you she's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And she's in a better place. I wonder just what you meant by that, because, you know, you want her back with you, of course, but why do you think that?
So when Brianna was with us, she struggled with her mental health, even though she was quite complex, so even though she came across as being really outgoing and she enjoyed attention, she did have anxiety, and she was actually self-harming, and she had an eating disorder. After her death, I was really, really shocked to find out that she was on Twitter. And on Twitter, they have pro-anorexia and self-harming sites on there. I think since the pandemic, she was isolated, and she'd found these kind of things, and she was, I would say, kind of brainwashed into doing that and thinking that was a good thing to do.
And you've talked about algorithms, and you know, once you start looking at one of those, you know, that your phone kind of, you know, pushes you towards that more and more.
Yeah. So if you're in a low place already and you are searching, like, if you search how to cope, and then somebody says, like, why don't you self-harm? It can relieve stress. And then once you've looked at that, you'll just be fed more and more of it. And I think that that's probably what did happen in Brianna's case. And as a mother, it was a constant worry that she was going to harm herself. So she was hospitalised for not eating. She'd got to such a low weight. It was a constant worry that she was putting herself at harm. And like I say, I didn't even realise that she was actually looking at these sites online.
There's a fine line between protecting your children and respecting their privacy. Mm-hmm. It's such an impossible conundrum of how you know they're safe, and this is you've raised this so eloquently all week, how you know they're safe without invading their privacy and it being a war zone at home.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's difficult, impossible for parents to always know what your kids are looking at. And as you found, she was looking at things that could not have been good for her.
When somebody told me that she was on Twitter looking at this stuff, like I wasn't on social media a lot, and I'm not great with technology, and I didn't even think that she would have been on Twitter, and I didn't know at all that this kind of stuff was going on Twitter. But now, after hearing about that, and obviously putting myself like in the public eye and doing interviews, when I've looked on Twitter, the comments are absolutely disgusting. Like, there's some really horrific trans hate comments on Twitter aimed at Brianna after her death. Like, don't get me wrong, I'm all for free speech. I think that yeah. It's really, really great to hear other people's opinions and to debate on things. And that's, everybody's got a different perspective, and it's good to understand other people. But it's hate. It's not free speech. It's something that doesn't need to be said.
And obviously, you say that, you know, there'll be a vigil on Sunday. Obviously, that's a very public thing on Sunday. Will you be having some kind of time with your family to just think about it privately? I mean, are you planning on to go and see her at a grave or anything like that?
So Brianna doesn't have a grave. I've got her ashes in a pink casket. I don't think I've told anybody this. Because I think I mentioned to you before that she loved being in a room. She was always there, and she was always in the pink pajamas. So because of that, I've got her ashes in her room. So she's always with us.
Just take a minute. Yeah. Just take a minute, Esther.
Brianna's room was an absolute mess. That was another argument point. So I've just freshened it up a bit and decorated it, and it was pink anyway, but it's just got fresh pink walls, and I've made it exactly how she would want it. She always wanted a pink fluffy rug, and I wouldn't let her have one because she always spilt stuff all over her floor. But she's got a pink fluffy rug now. I go in and sit with her, and we've got like a picture wall with all of her pictures on it, just to remind me of like, happy times. And it's such a calm, like a calming room as well. So it feels nice to be in there and to be sat.
You said before, when we just paused actually, that one of Brianna's really good friends said she wouldn't want to be in the dirt.
She'd want to be at home with her family, and I couldn't leave her on her own.
You talked about in your victim impact statement in court that she was a real home bird, and that's what you struggled with initially, that the house was quiet and, you know, she wasn't there when you came home from work. Just tell us a bit about how you kind of dealing with that.
It was really, really difficult at the beginning. Because as you say, she was a home bird, and when I came home from work, she would be there, and you could always hear her voice. Even if she was in a room, she would be on FaceTime to one of her friends. She was just a constant presence. Yeah, chatting. Like a way of dealing with it for me. For example, at Christmas and these kind of points in the year, I've just made sure that we've done something different. So instead of, we would always be home on Christmas morning, but instead of that, we got straight out of the house and went to my mum's house and spent the morning with her, so that we don't notice that big, like, hole.
We're going to talk about the day this happened, the day she died, the day she was taken from you, but I wonder whether you could, what you remember of anything about the days before or the weeks before, and how she was, and what you remember about just the days before that happened.
To be honest, I really can't remember anything like before that. I feel like it's just like, obviously, the amount of trauma that I experienced from that day, that's all I can remember, and I can't really remember like the run up to it. Like, I can just remember that day like it was yesterday, but anything before that, no. I think like my mind has just completely wiped everything.
What do you remember about the day and what you knew and when you knew?
So on that day, Alicia and I went out to, I think we went ice skating or something, and Brianna didn't want to come, she wanted to stay at home. Like I said, she didn't like to leave the house, she wanted to be at home. We went to visit my mum, and whilst we were at my mum's, Brianna texted me to say that she was going out to meet Scarlett, and that she'd locked the dogs up.
And what did you know about Scarlett before then? Had you actually met her?
I hadn't met her. Brianna had sent me, she used to tell me that they would go to like McDonald's after school or the shopping centre, and she'd sent a picture of them both at one point, but I'd never, she wasn't friends with her for a very long time. I think they'd only known each other for maybe a couple of months, and they weren't particularly close friends, but still she was a friend that I trusted that she would be okay to go out with.
When you got the text, and obviously if you put that in the context of the fact that Brianna was often anxious and didn't like to go out, I don't know whether your heart lifted a little bit because you're thinking, she's going out.
I was really, really happy that she was going out because, like I say, she was quite a recluse. She didn't go out and she didn't socialise face to face, and I always worried how that would impact her because she got most of her socialisation online, and I don't think that you can. I don't think that that is like a replacement for face to face socialisation. Like, yeah. It's not the same. So I was always worried about how that was impacting her. So when she did say that she was going to go out with Scarlett this day, I thought, oh yeah, she's going to go out and she's going to have a lovely time. And I think the weather wasn't raining. It was quite nice for that day. And I thought she's going to go out and get some fresh air. And then later on, she texted me to say that she was on the bus and she was scared. So she sent me a picture of her feet on the bus, and she said that she was frightened because she was a bit anxious. But
she hadn't been on a bus on her own before.
No. And prior to that, because obviously she was in her last year at school, and I was a little bit concerned that she might. Like, I was thinking, how will she get to college and how will she do this? And I thought, because she was on the bus, that she'll be okay, she'll be able to get to college.
So you're thinking, you know, as a mum does, this is a breakthrough because she's going to go to college.
Yeah, exactly, and that alleviated my worry.
So what happened next? So, Ron, we heard from Alicia's victim impact statement that she was at home when the police called.
So when we got home, I took the dogs out with my partner, Wes, and we actually saw a lot of police cars. And we were interested, like, if you see this kind of thing, it's like, I wonder what has happened. But I never for one second thought that it would be Brianna. And when we got back, there was police in our street as well. And I kind of, like, it sounds terrible now to say, but I kind of joked and said, because Brianna, like, she actually, before I left the house, I tried to ring her and the phone was off, but that wasn't unusual. Like, I paid for contracts for my kids and they'd hardly ever answer the phone to me. And I kind of joked on the way back to the house from walking the dog saying, if Brianna doesn't turn up soon, I'm going to have to ring the police for her as well. And we turned the corner and the front door was open. And there were two policemen standing inside. And Alicia was stood on the stairs, like looking like panicked. And I think the first thing that I said to the police was, oh, what has she done? Like, obviously, it's such a bit of a knee-jerk reaction to them. And they asked me to sit down. And I said, because I had all this stuff running through my mind, that I didn't want to sit down and just tell me now. And they said they'd found a body. And, my stomach sank and I didn't cry straight away. And we went through to sit down at the dining table, and I think I was just in complete shock. And Then at one point the police said, you'll have to identify the body, and I just completely broke down and said I don't want to, because it'll make it real.
Have you ever felt like escaping to your own desert island? Jane Gaskin did exactly that, trading in the family home to begin a new life in the tropics. But she soon discovers that paradise has its secrets. I'm Alice Levine, and this is The Price of Paradise, the island dream that ends in kidnap, corruption, and murder. Wish you were here? Follow The Price of Paradise now, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Esther, did you know at that point that this wasn't an accident? Did they let you know what they thought, or were you in the dark for a while?
I can't remember how long I didn't know for, but at first I was told that she'd been found dead, and that there was she had injuries, but they didn't know whether she took her own life or whether it was... So I think that maybe the policeman that came around, he didn't know the exact details at this point. He was trying to tell me probably as little as what he could, so that he wasn't misinforming me. It is such, I can remember all of that so clear, but then the days afterwards, like, my time is just all, like, warped, and I can't really remember exactly what happened when. It was a bit of a mash in my brain. But then, like, that night, I think we were all in shock, and we just kind of carried on like normal. And I remember having such stupid thoughts, like thinking, because we had plans for the next day, and thinking, oh, what am I going to do? Like, do we cancel it? Do you know, like, just really, really silly thoughts. But I think it was just that shock. And then obviously the next day when you wake up and you realise, because I think sometimes you wake up and you think, oh, maybe that didn't really happen. And then obviously just everything got completely cancelled. It was like, no, it's this is real, it's happened. And like, Alicia was so supportive, and I feel like I've got a very close relationship with Alicia. Like, she's my best friend. For a good few nights we slept in the same bed together. Just didn't want to be on our own.
And I was really struck in your victim impact statement when you said that you'd kind of cup your ear to the wall so you could hear her voice on the other side of the wall.
Yeah, because when Brianna was here, like I said, she was always at home, and the wall is really thin between mine and her room. And I'm really into mindfulness and meditation, and I was getting into a really good routine of meditating in the morning and in the evening. She'd be on FaceTime to her friends in the evening when I'd go to meditate, and I'd be like shouting, saying, "Will you stop talking? Because I want some quiet for meditating." And when I went into my room and I couldn't hear that, it's just, so I would put my ear against the wall and just really hope that, you know, almost hope that she would still be there.
So you said the next few days were a blur. It all seemed to happen at once. But obviously it did transpire that, you know, school friend had been arrested, and then another person that I assume you didn't know. Again, I'm assuming the police would have kept you up to date as much as possible, but I imagine you're just reeling.
Yeah, like I say, I can't remember the first, say, at least the first month. I was just living one day to the next, just really just surviving. And one thing that I did try to do is I tried to carry on with, like, mindfulness and meditation, because I knew that would help me, and I knew that I knew that it would be good as well to go for walks every day, because I'm into keeping healthy and looking after myself, and we'd go for walks every evening, me, Alicia and Wes. And again, it was pink skies every evening when we were going for walks. It was pink skies.
It's kind of visceral, isn't it? People talk about when you lose a child, that kind of visceral grief that affects you physically, yeah, mentally, your whole body.
It completely affected my body. I didn't even realise that grief could do such a thing. Like, all side of my body was swollen. Like, my arm was, it all swelled up. And, it impacted. There was all these physical signs of grief. And I remember as well, it was like day three and my eyes were absolutely out here. They were so swollen because I was just constantly crying. It was the worst time of my life, and I don't think I'll ever experience anything. I hope I never experience anything like that again, and I would never wish that on anybody. And yeah, if I can prevent this kind of thing from happening in the future to other people, other parents, then I'll do all that I can.
I wonder at what point you realised, and whether it was a comfort, just the outpouring of love and support and horror. And then you realised you knew she was amazing, but did you know everyone else, all these thousands of people, knew it too? And then they were all...
Because it was nationwide, wasn't it?
Yeah, vigils everywhere. Yeah. And then the community just seemed to rally. And I wonder whether that was like...
Did you go to any of these, or were you just... Was it too much?
I went to one in Warrington, the Warrington Town Centre one, because a friend came down from Scotland to come as well, so I attended it with her. But I wasn't looking at the news or anything like that at the time. But Alicia's friends and some of my friends were sending me like screenshots of what was actually happening. And I think there was like a schedule of vigils that were happening. That was a comfort. It was a comfort for me because I knew that Brianna would have liked that. She would have wanted that. It just shows that humanity is good, and that we can all rally around and we can all care for each other. There is that empathy and there is that compassion there still after something so horrific happening.
And then obviously you talked about the first month, and then there was obviously the funeral. I was looking at pictures last night of the funeral, actually. I was saying to you, the white horses and everyone dressed in pink. Just tell us a bit about that day.
Yeah, that was also a blur too. But we wanted it to be special, and we wanted it to reflect Brianna's personality. And even though it's so sad, that was a day for her. It was such a blur. And I remember waking up in the morning and just thinking that I just wish that day wasn't happening.
Esther, is it okay if we walk back a bit to when Brianna was born and, you know, her life as a baby, a toddler, a child growing up? What was she into? What was she like? You've talked about her being utterly hilarious and also really complex as well. But maybe wind us back a little bit to when she was born.
She was quite hyperactive, and I had to have eyes in the back of my head with her. Absolutely everybody loved her, so a lot of the friends that I've got now are people that like I met at school or on the bus, because she would speak to everybody and everyone would just she was just so adorable. I think when she was little, she was fun loving and she was happy, and she was funny then as well. And I think that even though she was 16, she still had that part of her, the childlike part that she had when she was little. When she was in the later years of primary school, my eldest daughter, it might have been a bit earlier than that actually, my eldest daughter was really into gymnastics. And Brianna obviously looked up to her sister and she wanted to do gymnastics as well. So my eldest taught her how to do some gymnastics, and she was so determined, and she was actually really, really talented. So she started gymnastics as well. And she would always get a medal in every competition that she did. And she just had this determination. I feel like Brianna, if she was interested in something, she would become really quite obsessed and she would want to do really well in that particular thing. And she had that determination.
And what was her thing? Beam, bars, floor,
tumbling.
Tumbling was her thing. Yeah, she would just like... It looks so easy as well. I feel like I could do it when I'm looking at her, but then I try to do a cartwheel and there's no chance. But yeah, she was absolutely amazing at doing tumbling and just being able to do those flips. Like, she was so strong and supple. And yeah, they were both, like, I'd go to the shopping centre with them both, with Brianna and Alicia, and they'd be doing flips and cartwheels down the... stop doing that, come and hold on to the trolley. And yeah, they'd be all over the place doing gymnastics. But I think it's so important to have these kind of hobbies for kids as well.
Obviously, you talked about she got into gymnastics when she was at the later years of primary school. How was she at school at that point? I know later on she, you know, maybe wasn't so keen to go, but earlier on, like before lockdown, for example, and in the earlier days, did she like school? Was she bright? Did she like the subjects, or is she not that bothered?
I think she liked school for the social side of it. She was diagnosed with dyslexia, and she was at a later age, she was diagnosed with ASD and ADHD. So I think that school was a bit of a struggle for her, but she loved to go to school to see her friends and to, which got her into a bit of trouble, perhaps, that she didn't want to knuckle down and do her work. She would have rather had...
Chatting away in class.
But yeah, that was before the pandemic, and post-pandemic, she didn't want to socialise with people, and she just became this more anxious, reserved person. And but prior to the lockdowns and the pandemic, she was much more outgoing and she enjoyed going out.
We're hearing that a lot about children, aren't we? That reluctance then to go back to schools, some classes being half empty. Mm-hmm. You say you saw a difference between pre-pandemic and then during the pandemic and then post.
A massive difference, yeah. And I think that my eldest was more resilient than what Brianna was, but it even impacted her. So I think that even the most resilient kids were impacted by it, even adults too. And I think that we underestimate the amount of trauma that it's actually caused people. And I don't think that enough is being done to rectify what has happened, and we've been expected to just crack on and carry on like this. Yeah.
Can you remember the time or pinpoint the time that she came to you and said she was, having thoughts or was worried about her gender?
To be honest, I can't remember exactly what was said. And I can't, sometimes you can picture exactly what happened in your mind, but I really can't. And it wasn't that big of a thing for us as well. Like, I think as a parent, all you want is for your child to be happy. And especially if your child is going through, you don't think that your child's particularly happy. That, she at the time was anxious and she was feeling quite low. And I just wanted her to be happy, and anything that made her happy and safe, I would completely support.
But amazing that she had that closeness to you, that she wanted to talk to you. And I wonder how she broached it.
So I think it was around 2020, and she spoke to her sister first. I thought that maybe she was questioning the sexuality. So it didn't come as a massive surprise when she did come out as being trans to me.
You might not have an answer to this. I just wonder whether... Do you sort of put her anxiety, because obviously what you've described is a really carefree, vibrant, hilarious young person, you know, loving her sport and her sister and her friends. Lockdown comes and you see a big change. When you look back now, do you know whether the change was because of lockdown or because of the sort of thoughts around her gender that she was dealing with, or a bit of all of the above?
I'm not sure how much her gender impacted the way that she felt, because, like I say, she felt like she could be open enough and she felt that she could be who she was, so who she wanted to be, so she didn't have... I think maybe it impacts your mental health if you feel like you have to hide away and you don't feel like you've got that support. I do think that the pandemic and lockdowns massively impacted her mental health, and I think the fact that she was socially isolated, and also because I was working an hour away and I was a key worker, I couldn't stay at home and monitor. So she was at home on her own, and she had a phone, and she was living in this online world, and she wasn't socialising face to face with people, so she wasn't getting that. And she obviously, as we now know, she was looking at things that were quite disturbing. And yeah, I think that all of this combined massively impacted her mental health. And I think that a lot of young people have all been through this as well. And I'm not making myself out to be a perfect parent. It's like, does such a thing exist? Like, we all struggle. It doesn't come with a handbook. And each child is so different. Like, from Alicia to Brianna, they've, like, chalk and cheese, they're completely different. But I didn't know that she was on these sites looking at the pro-anorexia and self-harm websites, and how many parents out there perhaps don't know what if their child is accessing this kind of stuff. And it's scary, and I think this is why I'm calling for mobile phone companies to take more responsibility, because as parents we're expected to work full time, we've got children to look after, you've got to keep a house, you've got to look perfect, and there's all these societal pressures. But now as well we're expected to monitor a child on a phone or a teenager on a phone 24/7, when kids are so much more tech savvy.
They're invested in the new sites, the new apps, the new... Yeah. The new devices, and as you rightly said, they've spent a year living their life online.
Yeah.
And suddenly we say, right, put that away and get back and start being normal again. And I'm interested because I think there's been an assumption made, Esther, that Brianna was struggling a lot because of her gender, mm-hmm. and that was the root of the anxiety. And what you seem to be saying is actually she'd found maybe a little bit of comfort in the fact that you were completely supportive of whatever gender she wanted to be.
And she found support online through this whole kind of like social media family. Mm-hmm. But there was other pernicious kind of influences coming through off social media that were affecting her mental health.
Plus the impact of lockdown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think as well that if you have been socially isolated for such a long time, then to be thrown into a school with hundreds of kids, like Brianna being trans is one part of her. The struggles that she had are the same struggles as what so many other kids are having. And I think that the mobile phone companies need to take more responsibility, because I don't think that this responsibility should lie with the parents. Like, it was the cause of so many arguments between me and Brianna, and I think that life is too short to be constantly battling with your kids. And
when she went back into school, was that the first time she'd kind of gone into school with a new identity, or was that not an issue for her?
It wasn't an issue for her. This is why she's so complex, and because she had the anxiety and she had all of the struggles, but she was also really, really outgoing and not afraid to be who she wanted to be. And she had such a sharp tongue, and she was really witty. And
she changed her name. Was that just something that everyone just accepted? I mean, obviously you did, Alicia did. Everyone was just supportive of that because she was so confident in that this was the right thing for her.
Yeah. All of her friends were really accepting, and school was really accepting and supportive.
Do you know why she picked Brianna?
She wanted to be called, what did she say now, Brittany? And I was like, there's no way that I'm going to allow you to be called Brittany. So we managed to compromise with Brianna, yeah.
She wanted your maybe help on that, guidance on that, or approval?
I think Alicia had an input as well, so maybe if it was only my input, she might not have really listened to me. But yeah, the fact that Alicia was backing me up and saying you can't be called Brittany as well, but yeah, she, yeah.
Well, it sounds like they had a very close relationship.
It does, yeah.
And yeah, and like I was a single parent when they were growing up, and it was just me and Alicia and Brianna, and they were really close. Don't get me wrong, they argued a lot as well, but I know that they loved each other. They really loved each other, and Alicia could give Brianna some jip, but nobody else was allowed to. So Alicia was that protective older sister, and she, yeah, I think that's why she found it so difficult.
To sort of touch on that point and your own victim impact statement, we had quite a lot of emails after your statement where people were saying, breaks my heart that Esther thinks she's let her down. Why do you think that?
I think that I was the only person that Brianna had, and I was the one that was responsible. Sorry. I was the person that was responsible for her, and I was the one that should protect her. And like, she struggled so much when she was with me, and I just feel like I should have been able to do more, and I should have been able to protect her. And you always look back on things and think, maybe if I'd have done something differently, then this wouldn't have happened. But
I think there'll be a lot of people saying, you know, it sounds like you're an amazing mum, yeah, and you did, you know, nobody could have foreseen that, you know, one of her friends and another child could have done what they did to her. So you really shouldn't feel like that.
Yeah, I think that sometimes we can be our worst critic, and like, there's been times obviously after her death where I wasn't campaigning and I did have that time, and you do look back and you think, maybe I should have done this, or I could have done that. And I think we all probably think that we could do better, or we could do something different, and it's just, I'm just trying to have a bit more self-compassion and not be so hard on myself. And the thing is that I can't go back and I can't change the way that things were. And
I know that you've talked about your mindfulness, which obviously must help. And I was really moved by what you said about not carrying hate, because it's, you know, it'll eat you up, essentially, I think is what you're saying. But I also heard you say that, you know, there's no way you could ever forgive Scarlett Jenkinson and Eddie Ratcliffe for obviously taking Brianna from you. Just tell us a bit more about those kind of feelings. I think most people will think it's so amazing of you to be able to say that you don't hate them.
Yeah, as you said, though, it's holding on to hate is something that is only going to impact you. No matter how much hate I hold on to, it's not going to have an effect on them. And if I allow myself to be overcome with hate, then I'm not going to be productive. I'm not going to be able to be positive and look to the future and see what we can change. And I do think it's important to learn from things that happen in order to make a change, and to see like where are there issues that we could potentially tackle and we can make better, and we can then hopefully prevent this kind of thing from happening again. I've got two choices. I could stay at home and be completely riddled with hate and want to get revenge, so to speak, or I can try to make a change and just use that energy, I suppose, to drive myself forward.
You can't always stop yourself feeling like this in this unbelievable trauma that you're sitting in. So the strength of character that shows, that you can get up and start working for a better change, is extraordinary.
Thank you. I really do believe that mindfulness has helped me with that. And so that's the other campaign that I started at the beginning with the Warrington Guardian. And I'm aiming to get a mindfulness teacher in every school in Warrington. I've now hit over £55,000. And I think with mindfulness, there's such a misunderstanding about it, about building mental fitness and The same way as if you went to the gym and you were lifting weights and like building muscle and becoming like you getting a fit body, it's getting a fit mind and it's having that mental resilience and that empathy towards others and also, as I mentioned before, like self-compassion. And I think that when you do practice mindfulness, it just helps you to understand yourself better, and it helps you to notice those thoughts that might be negative and that might not be productive. And because sometimes you can just sit there and you can mull over the same thoughts over and over again, and it's so easy to do that and not really recognise that you are doing that. But if you've got this kind of mindfulness practice and you've built a certain level of mental resilience, you can then notice those thoughts and you can stop them. Like, I've not always felt like this. Like, when I was younger, I went through quite a traumatic time when I was a teenager, and I reacted completely differently. So I think that having this mindfulness practice in place before what happened to Brianna, I just had that level of mental fitness that has been able to sort of take the impact and help me to be more positive and to...
Is that what you've drawn on then when you talk about being open to meeting Scarlett Jenkinson's mother, for example, and feeling like able to talk to her? Well, I mean, what would you say to her?
Like, I really, really do feel so sorry for them. And I know how difficult it is to keep track of your children. And even though it's your job to bring your child up correctly, like, I completely agree with that, but ultimately they are their own person. It's not, you don't have complete control over another person. They've got their own mind and their own thoughts, and so I don't necessarily think that the upbringing is reflected in the crime that they've committed. They have also lost a child, but they've not only lost a child, but they've also got that shame attached to it, and I think it's absolutely horrific what they're going through as well. And I think it's an extremely sad situation for everybody, and nobody would have wanted this to happen. And
your offer to speak to her is still there.
Yeah, definitely. I'd like to speak to her, because I think that she will obviously be grieving as well. And yeah, I just want her to know that I obviously don't blame her. Like I said before about how I blame myself sometimes, and I think I wish I could have done this differently, I wish I could have done that, I wish I hadn't have had this many arguments with her, I wish I hadn't have pushed her on this. I can't imagine what she's thinking.
Okay, so you've obviously got all your campaigning now and moving forward with so much positive change for people around you, but there's a bit of positive change for you as well coming, I think.
So I've been with Wes for almost 10 years now. It's 10 years in April, and I've got to cry. I feel emotional now. he's such a good man, and he was an amazing stepdad to both of the children. And he's been my complete rock throughout all this. I don't think that I feel like without him, I wouldn't be so strong. And we're going to be getting married in June. It was very emotional when we went to see the venue, because we walked down where I will walk down, like, for the ceremony, and like in my mind I just thought, like, Brianna isn't going to be there, and she would have loved to have been there to see me and Wes get married. But...
Thank you so much, Esther.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you.
And good luck with everything.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
There really isn't anything more that we can add, I don't think. Esther's compassion, her empathy, her courage and her amazing positivity speak volumes.
Yeah, Caroline, her words will, I'm sure, resonate with people all over the world. We did want to finish, though, didn't we, by helping Esther with a final push for her campaigns for positive change.
Yeah, you've heard all about what she wants to achieve in that interview there. So let's just tell you how you can help her. You can sign her petition calling for a change in the law to make mobile phone companies more responsible for children's online welfare. It can be found at change.org.
And you can also donate to her Peace in Mind campaign for mindfulness teachers in schools via the Brianna Jai Memorial GoFundMe site. and we're going to share links to both of these on our Twitter page.
Don't forget, Jack and I will be back next week with more from the Old Bailey on the trial of Constance Martin and Mark Gordon. You can leave us a comment on Spotify or even send us a voice note on WhatsApp. 07796 657 512. Start your message with the word trial.
You can also read my write-up of Esther's interview on Mail Plus and in the Daily Mail on Saturday. In the meantime, you can follow us on X at The Trial Podcast, and you can contact us, thetrial@mailmetromedia.co.uk.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.